Welcome to all those who participate over the internet, PBS Radio. Thank you so much for being here. We still have more people joining in over the conference call line, and I welcome. We just had Myra from Mount Shasta. It's great to hear somebody in Mount Shasta is participating. And to those who came in lately here, if you want to, feel free to say your name and location.
I'm Will in Chicago.
Hey, Will. How are you?
Doing good.
All right. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure.
Good morning to you.
All right. It's good afternoon for Will.
Good afternoon, Will.
All right, we have a little bit of background noise. I will mute the line who's making the noise. So,
make nice, baby.
I think this is the one. If I mute you, nothing against you except the noise you're making. Good morning and welcome to the Grid Healing Call. Please say your name and location.
Morning, Zoe, Sacramento.
Hey, Zoe, how are you?
Good, I'm doing good. How are you, Hans?
Doing well, thank you. Carolyn is here as well.
Morning,
hi,
everybody.
Hi, Zoe.
Hi,
Zoe. Francis here.
I'm Neil Chopra.
And we had somebody else join in. Good morning. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Anil Chopra from Ontario, Canada.
Hi, Anil. How are you?
Wonderful.
All right. Thank you for being here. Good morning. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location. If you want to. Good morning. Welcome to the call. Please say your name and location.
Joel in Chicago.
Hey, Joel. How are you?
I'm doing well.
All right.
Win on the line?
Will's here.
Telephone.
Hey, Will. How are you?
Good.
All right.
Hey, Heise. Will has just started reading the Creator God of the Universe, and I always recommend that. I think it's the best ever. I said, I wish I'd have read that book before reading, you know, the Law of One or any of the other material. I think it's such a great lead-in. And Will just sent me a text this morning saying he's getting a lot out of it as well. I think it's
yes, I read it.
There. That's a good conversation. If anyone wants to pick that up or talk about it, I do think it is.
Thanks for bringing it up, Joel. It's a great read, and it's something you can continue to read, you know, once in a while.
Just for the whole people to get an understanding of something that is so unbelievable from a comprehensive standpoint, from the means in which we've all been raised. That doesn't exist. This only happens to. It doesn't happen to you. It doesn't happen to ordinary people. Until such time you experience. Once you experience, become the experiencer. You're no longer the observer. You're the participant.
Yes.
And it just paints a really good, credible story as to what Win's story is. I think it's plausible. I love that.
It's a good one to
introduce to people, and I've had more people get a lot out of that than anything else. So open their eyes.
I welcome the person who just came here. Please say your name and location.
Hi, this is Carla.
Hi, Carla. Good morning. How are you?
I am just fine. How are you, guys?
Fantastic.
How is everybody? I hope you're all doing well.
I believe so.
Good. Thanks, Carla.
We love you all so much.
And
hi, Carla.
This is
Wynn.
Can you hear me?
I can.
We hear you now.
I will.
Okay. How does my microphone sound today?
Good.
Good. We have some noise coming from the other lines. I welcome the next person still. Thank you for being here. Please say your name and location.
Timothy in Arkansas.
Good morning. Welcome to the call.
Hello.
Hi, this is Tammy from
Del
Rey.
Hi, Tammy. Welcome to the call.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, Tammy.
Hi, Win.
Tammy, do you ever go to that souvlaki place on the main street of Playa? No, that's not Playa del Rey. Excuse me. That's the coffee shop. That's right downtown, across from the bar, right? Never mind.
or maybe that's your answer.
maybe that's my answer. I used to, when I lived in L.A., Playa del Rey was one of my getaway places.
All right, I'm going to mute the lines. We have some noise coming off the some of the phone lines. We are live on BBS Radio. We have the entry and exit signs off, so we are ready to rock and roll. Carla is here.
Is Terry here?
Terry is not here yet, no. She's still working on her hair, apparently.
She was on Skype video for the first time yesterday, so.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So she's probably working on her hair then.
Probably working. Well, I'll tell you what, just before we start, let me just go in the other room and yell, not yell, but gently encourage her to get on.
Here she is.
Oh, there she is.
Oh, that's not her. No, wait. Who is that?
What are you looking for?
We're looking for you.
Hi. Hi.
You know what? You're acting like star status here, okay? coming in politely late, right?
With a secret number.
She's just opening up and waiting.
That's right.
Well, the cell phones aren't working here, so I tried to call on the cell, but it's not working. So then I tried to call on Uma, but I had to figure out how to disengage the other line so it doesn't come in with calls during our call. Anyway.
Because you're on a new phone number right now, huh?
Oh, yeah. I'm on the 805 number now.
No, you're on a 515 right now.
515.
Well, when you do an outgoing call on UMA, it shows up the 928 number, okay, on the call waiting. But that's okay.
Okay.
All right. Let me just see something here. I think I'm going to start out with a song.
You're not recording yet, Vin.
No, I know. I know. I'm just getting ready here.
Carla, did you receive my email?
I don't think I received the advice. I don't remember it.
There's a recognition from David Wilcock, his latest post newsletter.
No, I didn't get that.
Okay.
I did get one from him some time ago. It was about a week ago, and we talked about the question that he asked on our show at Friday at 8. No, it was a drawing. Was it a drawing of, like, a circle, and it was within a square? Did he send you a drawing that was fairly complex that started out a circle within a square, and then it had a diamond within that, and it has sort of a zigzag thing within that? And he said that he got that it was very important. So I responded to that.
Hmm.
In so far as I could, you know.
Well,
it's interesting because I had just been working on the importance of the archetypes, and the archetypes all begin with a square. It's the concept complex always begins with a square, and then you.
Now listen, Carla. Don't get too interesting. Okay.
Because
we haven't started the recorder yet, okay? So, stand by. We're going to start. I'm just curious. Ariel isn't on the line, is he? Ariel? Did you notice Ariel?
I have not heard him, no.
Maybe he's listening on the internet. Maybe he's not listening.
And I'm praising in my mind.
Here we go. Get ready. 10:08.
This conference is being recorded.
And this is
July 14th, 2013, with Wind and Terry in Sedona, Carla in Anchorage, Kentucky, Heis in Magalia, California, and all of you all over the place. And thank you for joining us on our Sunday, we used to call it a grid healing. Now we call it a planetary healing. And, you know, I had all these thoughts about, you know, what happens before these calls is my mind starts racing and thinking, I'm going to talk about this. I'm going to talk about that. This is how I'm going to start. And now that I'm here, see, I didn't take notes. If I took notes, I probably should. I would look at those and say, oh, yes, that's what I was going to call about. I'll tell you one thing that I was going to mention was years ago, I used to think I was really advanced. Do you know there is this propensity in humans to want to feel special? And of course, you're already special. And the wanting to feel special is some kind of illusion that comes out of lack of self-worth because you're already special. So in this attempt to feel special, we do a lot of dumb things, like we create a religion and then we think we have a special religion. Or somebody says, I know Wynn talks to me all the time. They think I'm special. If I talk to them, they're special. And so you see, it perpetuates illusion to want to be special because you are bypassing the fact that you already are special. And when you're special, what does special mean? It means that you're alive, you are part of God, you're part of all that is, and what else do you need? The question becomes, what do you do with your specialness? First thing is to connect with it. And the second thing is, what do you do with it? Well, in the need to feel special, you create this illusion that you become special because other people recognize you. And other people then say, wow, you're really good. You're really sharp. That's really meaningful. And so you get into this group, lower level illusion that specialness comes because other people recognize it. And that's not really specialness. The specialness is still there, and you still may be doing special things. But this need for other people to acknowledge you is one of the downfalls of this realm, because that's how religion gets corrupted. That's how everything gets corrupted, because somebody has the need for someone else to think they're special. And so they become special because other people believe it. And that is probably a good explanation as any for ego, okay? That let me put something out into the world that causes other people to think I'm special. And then when you get people to think you're special, you've got an ego connection. Now, this is not judgmental. This is not saying that's wrong. This is looking at it and saying that this is the way that it seems to work. And then we look for groups, and then we look for designer clothes to think that we're special. We wear the clothes that everyone knows cost a lot of money, even though they were probably counterfeit and came in from China. We'll fool them. But nonetheless, we're going to walk into a room and people are going to look at us and say, he's special. He's wearing those clothes. The problem with this idea is that it's like a vacuum cleaner that never has enough. Because, okay, you walk into the room and you're wearing the designer clothes, and then they go out of vogue. Now you got to go look for new designer clothes. If you happen to have a following, like we have a following here, people keep coming back. And if I happen to be attached to the idea of being special, every time I did a show, I'd have to be thinking, what's the next big breakthrough thing that I can tell people so that they keep thinking that I'm special? And one of the things that I learned from Carla Rucker, this was very profound. You know how there's little things that kind of stick and that don't let go? And I had a lot of those things in studying the raw material from Carla. And one of them, now I'm not sure if this was in the raw material or Don Elkin's question, was this idea that if you didn't want to get a negative source, you had to ask questions that were not just in the moment, okay, but had to do with the answer would be just as true 10,000 years from now or 10,000 years before that it is now. And I said, wow. Okay, now you see, you can't use that as a criteria and then try to be special all the time, because special always is, okay, guys, we're having an earthquake tomorrow, and in 3 weeks we're having a conflagration here, and the planet is changing, and everyone's going to ascend, and da-da-da-da-da-da. Believe it or not, as amazing as all those things are, they are of the moment. They're not true 10,000 years from now or 10,000 years prior. But you know what? The concept we're talking about right now, this idea of specialness and wanting to be special, I would bet that that is a trait of humankind that would be true 10,000 years from now, that was true 10,000 years ago, because it's an inherent lower-level illusion that humans get into. And it's inherent that when we're in this realm, we feel unworthy. And I think that's true across the board for almost everybody. And we each have this challenge of how to fix our unworthiness. And the lower level solution is to do something that other people think is special. And then you start thinking you're special because they're thinking you're special. And you have what's known as an ego trip. And, this is a good way to start this show, wasn't it? Well, you know, interestingly enough, when I was younger, I had that very same idea. I mean, I was really sharp. I was really metaphysically advanced. I knew astrology. I knew all kinds of things. And I could enter into metaphysical conversations and immediately be the smartest guy in the conversation. And everyone would be listening to me. And I used to think I was special because I could do that. That was part of, you know, my early life. And then I had this teacher that I used to go to, probably the best teacher I ever had in my life. He gave seminars in L.A. A couple times a month. And I knew that he was very metaphysically advanced. I knew it. He would drop hints. Sometimes he would do a talk and he would demonstrate his knowledge of the understandings of the universe. But he started dumbing down his talks, and he would talk about all these human qualities that everyone was going through. And I said, I used to think this was too simple for me. I needed somebody really advanced. I know he knows all this stuff. Why isn't he talking about it? Well, at some point during going to his lectures, something catalyzed in me where I lost all my abilities to feel special in the lower way. And I was having all my human karma come up, feeling alienated, worthless, dysfunctional, depressed, tight shoulders, didn't want to face the world. And it was the stuff he was talking about. Now, prior to that, remember, I went through this period where I was traveling around the country, playing music everywhere, and everyone treated me special. Now, there was an aspect to that where I was doing tremendous service. But there was another aspect where the specialness that was coming to me from people was provoking my ego, and I felt superior to people. And if I would meet somebody, I remember thinking, well, they're not going to know who I am until they hear my metaphysical knowledge or until they hear my great songs, because I wasn't good enough. But it was okay. That's where I was at. I was working through that. A lot of artists, artistic people, creative people have this dilemma because their creations are much better than they are, more advanced. They're tapping into high levels, and their human side can't equal it. And so their only resort is to take on an ego so that they can hold their human side, at least in some kind of holding pattern, to allow them to deliver their artistic expression. And this is not, we're not judging anything here. We're just looking at a process, because some of you are in that process, and maybe you never looked at it that way. And when you look at it that way, perhaps it'll make some cognitions. And one of the most amazing things that happened to me was when I first ran into David Wilcock, and I was checking him out and checking out what I thought of what he was doing. He was doing readings at that time, and I got a reading from him, and they addressed this idea that I'm talking about right now, and they addressed it very poetically and very masterfully. And what they said was, let's see if I can reframe this. They said that that I wasn't just the guy to go on stage and leave, because when the show was over, you had to clean up the stage. You had to do more. The show never stopped. Being on stage was not really the whole thing. The show continued when you got off stage. And I don't know if I'm expressing that as well as it was put, but I got it, because you see, that whole thing of always looking in the world for someone to think you're special, that idea of that is what they were addressing. And they were saying, it doesn't matter what people think. You do your work, and if people think you're special, fine. If people don't, fine. If people get mad at you, fine. There's a couple of times in the past few weeks where we talked about, you know, some of the emails I was getting from people who I offended in some way, and or were trying to find fault with me. And I mean, I do feel it. I feel it in the moment, but I go through it quickly and I move on. Now, I don't have to read the emails, and then I never know. But I do read them. And it was like sometimes when someone else has this need to feel to be special, to be recognized, they're still in that place, which I'm not judging because I was there for a long time. When they were in that place, and then they're jealous of someone that they perceive is getting attention. And they'll look at that person, and they'll be sure that person is coming from a big ego. Because, you see, this whole idea of creating specialness and having other people to validate your specialness is what ego is. It's a way of looking at ego. Because, you see, you're not coming from your own divine authority when you're doing that. You're worshiping the god of opinion. You're getting everyone to like you, and you're evaluating your own worth by how many people like you. And that is not, that's not bad. I'm not judging it. I'm just saying it's not from your highest place. It's not from the divine. It's worldly. It's transitory. It's temporary. Because as anyone who's in the public eye knows, one day the public loves you, the next day they don't love you, next week they don't, the next year they don't. People are famous, then they're not famous, and they lose it. And that's just the way it works. And if you're basing your self-worth based on how many people love you, you are in a worldly stand. And you are not doing spiritual work. Well, you're still doing spiritual work because everything's spiritual. And you can, like, even when I was doing all of my stuff, I know I was doing spiritual work. I know my songs were deep. My songs were touching people. One day I'm going to be putting more songs out. But my own human side was nowhere up for the quality of my inspiration. And even now I can say that my human side is not necessarily up for the quality of what we do here, but I have learned to work with my human side. I have learned I don't have to be perfect. I have learned you don't have to be perfect. I have learned to be able to stand in front of the public, which is what we're doing right now, and I can go through whatever I'm going through and share it with you. And in doing that, it gives you your permission to be human and to not be perfect and to realize that you'll never be perfect. And those people that present themselves as perfect, I guarantee you there's points in their life where they go home and they feel unworthy and they hide it and they disguise it. And it's okay. It's just the way it works. The goal here is not to find other people's weaknesses. It's to find the keys that each of you can apply to yourself to learn how to operate over your lower nature. Not to make your lower nature go away, because to my experience, it doesn't go away. It's always there. But you can aim higher. You know, sometimes we talk about timelines and how you can learn to access a timeline that's higher than your lower nature. And as you do that, you can not only see your lower nature, have more wisdom about it, but you can start operating. And it won't happen all at once. It'll be fits and starts. Start operating from that higher timeline and start to experience how it works when you do that. So, you know, one of the things that endeared me to Carla so much, and I'll just share this with you, is that she and I were commiserating when I first met Daphne, and I used to call her, and I used to send her the channelings, and I was kind of, what's going on here? I mean, this was kind of crazy. And I was sharing my poems with her, and we would talk back and forth, and we had a connection. And I was still pretty dumb at that time. I mean, I'm just less dumb now, but I was way dumber then about understanding the universe, understanding how all these things fit together. And when Daphne and I first split up, which was, I think, in September 2002, I went into that shock of losing somebody. Even though I was having a miserable time with her, you know, we had an ancient connection, and I really wanted it to work. And when it felt like the hope for that connection fell apart, felt like, well, I don't have to deal with these messages anymore. That was a kind of a relief, because David Wilcock, I was writing the book at the time, David was really kind of upset that I was having this experience, because here I was, his biographer, so to speak, and suddenly I have this woman who's bringing through these messages, and our relationship got more strained when that started to happen. And I thought that when Daphne left, part of the sense of loss, see, I thought of Daphne as a musical partner. You know, she's musical, I'm musical, and my music had kind of been on the back burner for a long time, and she was kind of, I thought she would inspire that part of me. And then when she left, all that completely crashed, and I felt very depressed. I felt a little good about not having messages come in, because I thought David and I would have a better relationship at that point. And then a few weeks later, Terry starts bringing messages in. So that didn't happen. But I remember calling Carla, and she felt me going through my stuff, and she invited me. She said, you can come stay with me. You know, it's a big house in Kentucky. You can come stay at my house. And I didn't do it, but I said, this woman really cares. She knows how bad I'm feeling, and she opened her heart unconditionally and said, you can come stay here. And I think the fact that she did that totally made me trust her completely
Terry.
And pardon me?
I said, go, Terry. Thank you.
Go, Terry.
To have somebody to trust.
Yeah. And so Terry came in, the messages came in, and I didn't move in with Carla. Terry and I started to expand our connection, and here we are. So, you know, I think that I had to go through all of that tough times, because I had to break myself of this habit that I had of being special for what I did, as opposed to being special for who I was. Special because I could manifest my own divinity. And it didn't matter what anyone would think. So on that note, I wasn't expecting to talk that long, so
you were on the roll. I couldn't interject. Please move your mic a little bit away from you.
There we go. Is that better?
Yep.
Okay, thank you for not interrupting. I probably would have just lost it completely. And on that note, you know, I know Carla's very on one hand, Carla loves talking and being in front of the public, and she's also extremely sensitive and shy. Terry is extremely sensitive and shy. Well, maybe not. Carla's not shy. I don't want to define her. But, you know, Terry has to stretch to be in front of the public, and I think that right now we are doing a really good job, all of us, being able to be in front of you all. And even though I know there's so many of you that are going through life-changing transitions as a result of what we're contributing, we don't feel any more special. In fact, the problem now is I have to, like, deal with one of my greatest Achilles heel in my life is responsibility. Because, you know, it's a great responsibility, I take it as that, to reach people and to hold the energy and to give to you my very best so that you can become your very best. And on that note, I know Carla has comments. Go, Carla.
Well, I can't really think of any comments that I've been storing up with. I think that... Okay. Nikki just handed me pills. It's always a mystery to me when he gives me another pill. Okay, thank you very much.
Well, let me ask you a question related to this. Okay, maybe I can stimulate something. You know, when you were younger, you made a movie. You were, you know, part of you was thinking you were playing music. I mean, did you have this idea of wanting to be special in the eyes of other people?
It wasn't that. I never wanted to be special. I wanted to share the love in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that I had that, and it was vital to me, absolutely vital, that I be able to serve the people around me. And if I couldn't do that, then I thought, well, life is not worth living. So any way that I could find to do that was just wonderful. And folk singing came along at just the right time for me to be 19 and slender and have long hair and, you know, have all the stuff that you're supposed to have to be a folk singer. And I sounded good. And I had a fellow that played guitar, and he sounded good. And we were really on the road to getting somewhere big. We had been practicing since I was 13. He hadn't been practicing so long, but, I mean, I was very authentically a folk singer. And so I wanted to share and give. And I could feel, you know, when I would sing in the coffee houses, I could feel the love. When I, the bigger the audience, the more the love. The, you know, 20,000 people meant a whole lot of love. So I didn't ever feel any shyness because here was my chance to share love. And when you say, well, Carl probably has something to say, I just sort of think, well, Spirit, okay, you have something to say, you know, and then I offer whatever else is on my mind. I think that it's a joy to me to be with you and to be poked with a stick every once in a while and say, well, you know, share from your heart, Carla. And from my heart, I can tell you, no, it's never been really important to me at all that people think I was special. The problem to me has been getting people not to think I'm special, to figure that I'm just a person like anybody else. And I think it's just one of those things. Some people are odd, and I grew up being an odd person. I sort of, I don't know, stuck out. You know, I can't really say why. I really never figured it out. But I certainly never worried about it and never thought about it much because my one thought was, well, I can share a lot of love with this song, so I really love this song. And, you know, and when everything fell apart in my music career, and when you had your music career fall apart at just a crucial time also, it was a heartbreak to me that I had to get over. But then, hey, I was helping people being a librarian, and I went into that with all my heart and soul and did was the best librarian I could be. And I wouldn't allow people to make it a tragedy, because I did not want to live that kind of life. I did not want to be that kind of person. I wanted to have a positive life, and I wanted people to see me as a person that was a happy person that was doing my own thing. And, you know, if I wasn't going to be a folk singer, well, I was going to be a librarian. There's absolutely nothing wrong with being a librarian. You know, I'd worked hard to be one. I'd taken a lot of courses and gotten a degree, so here I am. I'm a librarian. And when I went into writing for Don, it never occurred to me that anything would come of it, because you know how very few writing ventures ever pan out. But I thought, well, you know, it's worth trying, because I admired him so much, and he wanted me to write about such interesting things, and so what he wanted me to do was read. And I love to read. I read all the time. So he was getting me to read and report to him on books and magazines in the areas of UFOs and paranormal events of all kinds. And I was meeting fascinating people and witnesses that had a lot of interesting things to offer. So it just went from one thing to the next, and eventually here I was channeling and finding out things about, new things about that every day. So it's, I guess the message that all of that told me was, don't ever worry about it, because if something is not going to happen and you get a door shut there, well, just take a look at where else there is to go and go, you know, with all your heart and all your soul, and do the best you can with that, because there may be a good lot there too, and there usually is. And every time that I've gotten a door shut in my face, I've gotten another door open to me that was really good. So, you know, just, it's not that there's not a tragedy involved when your relationships don't work out and your marriages fail and all that kind of thing that's happened to me. I certainly was brokenhearted when my marriage failed, and brokenhearted when I couldn't sing anymore. I wanted to do those things real badly. But it wasn't so bad that it blinded me to the fact that I was a really lucky girl, that I had a job, I paid my bills, and loved to be a librarian, was very good at it, loved to sing. I could sing my folk songs for the kiddies and tell them stories and sing folk songs for them, and that was wonderful. And I'll teach my older kids creative writing and work with them on poetry and help them get through puberty, you know, because I had choices that I could make as a librarian. I get to pick what I had to offer teaching. So I could create things that I thought the kids would like that they couldn't get anywhere else. So, you know, there's always a way to express your creativity. There's always a way to find goodness. Anywhere that you are, it's a matter of not being closed to it, staying open. So I guess that's what I have to say this morning, Lynn.
Well, you know what occurred to me while you were talking is that, you know, there's a difference in the archetypes between a man and a woman. I was brought up in a home, and as a man, I had this thing that I was supposed to succeed in some way. And when you would be more successful, I would get the approval of everybody. Now, I don't think women have that same need. This is like talking about in general. In specific, everything is unique to the person. But in general, you know, you had that nurturing, the prime, you know, the hunter-gatherer kind of paradigm, where the man has to make money, provide, and the woman nurtures.
I did not have that. I never had that. I took care of my husband from the day we were married. He never got a job. He never finished school. He was a mess. He was a total mess. I was his mother, I guess he figured, after he didn't want to grow up. And he never got a job. The first job he ever got was when he left me and said that he wanted to do something else with his life, didn't want to be married anymore. Finally, he did get his very first job, and his very first job he was already making more than I was, you know, because I think men are just more able to get jobs than women, especially in the sciences. But at any rate, I was always the bread earner. I was always the one who had to pay the bills and put the food on the table. So, and not that my husband would ever cook or clean or anything. Good heavens, no. He spent his time out talking with the boys and playing with his... He put whatever money he did make. He worked at minimum wage as the night manager for... a flight shop at the airport. So he was. I worked 9 to 5. He worked from 5 to 11, and all day Saturday and Sunday. So I never saw him. And he spent all his time with his guys, and he was rebuilding his cars. You know, and he loved his cars, and he had like 5 of them. That's what he put all his money into. So no, honey. It would be nice if I had ever been taken care of in this life, but it just so happened that up until the time that Elkin said that he would pay the same salary as I was getting as a librarian for me to work with him, I never associated working with a person for, being with a person for being taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
And he really didn't offer that to me as a way of taking care of me. He wanted me to work for him. He wanted me not to go to school and be a school librarian. And so he was paying for me to stay at home and work for him. So, no, I don't know that I'm sorry that I never got taken care of in this life. I think it would have been nice to feel just once. But I do have that now. When I really need it, because I can't take care of myself. My husband, my second husband, Jim, is just the most incredible guy, and he does indeed take care of me. So I have finally experienced that in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels wonderful. I mean, you know, he says, I believe in you, and I think that what you're doing is worth it, and I know that you need the time to do that, so you go ahead and do that, and I'll get the money together to pay the bills. So go ahead. Please, with your theory, because I'm just an oddity that doesn't fit the archetypal. But, you know, as a matter of fact, until I was 25 years old, never in my life was I remotely taken care of.
Mm-hmm. When were you married in relationship to your...
I was married when I was 21. I was divorced when I was 25.
And when did you meet Don Elkins? After that?
I met Don Elkins when I was 19.
Uh-huh.
And all the while, and he told me later, he said, well, I knew that we would get together.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, Elk, why did you not tell me that? I could have spared myself 4 of the most miserable years of my life. And he said, what? And have you missed all that great catalyst?
All right.
Oh, well, I see that, Don. I see there's a good point there. Wouldn't want to have missed just a hair of that. Anyway,
right.
No, he was not what you'd call an expressive person, but I went to his meetings that he created. Those were the Louisville Group meditation meetings that became the Louisville Group channeling sessions, as the various people in the group picked up channeling.
Well, you know what? I see that as you got jobs and you became a provider. Even that was probably an expression of nurturing, not as an expression of having to become something in other people's eyes.
That's true.
You know?
I'll give you that right away.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So, Terry is similar. I don't think she ever had to do anything to be recognized in someone else's eyes. She's always done things to nurture the people around her. And, you know, she's told me many times that when she was younger, her big thing was to figure out how this realm worked. You know, she's, I mean, as I get it, she's a very, 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 very old soul. And that doesn't mean when you're born you remember any of those things. It means that some part of you knows there's more, and there's a mystery, and what is the more? And, you know, let me give Terry a chance to give her what comes up for her in this whole idea of the things we're talking about. Let's see if we hear her. Go ahead.
Okay, can you hear me?
We hear you.
Okay. Like, one of the big things for me was I can share space with somebody so easily that if they have some idea, like a theory, like they're superior and they're better at something and they're smarter at something than me, then in my space is very big and I really get that from their viewpoint. And one of the big things for me is learning how to stay centered so that I just don't take, you know, I can duplicate their viewpoint. And if there's something in me that doesn't allow that to flow on through me, but it gets caught, I said, gosh, I guess they're right, you know, I'm not very bright, I'm slow, they're much better than me, they you know, have a higher IQ than me, they have more words than me. It's like one of the big things is I'm learning to stay centered so that they can have all those ideas, because they do anyway, and I can still be centered and allow their viewpoint without getting swept off by their viewpoint. So that's a big thing for me, to be able to stay centered.
When you were younger, did you get swept away by other people's viewpoints?
I think I did. Like when my I was little, so I wasn't able to do things I wanted. Like I bonded with people, and then those people would be, I wasn't allowed to continue my friendship with them. It's like in my grandmother, when I stayed with her, said I wasn't allowed to have friends. I wasn't allowed to go to school because I might make friends. It was a lot to deal with because I wanted to make friends. And yet, I kind of became solitary because it wasn't open to me. But I was too little to just go out and have friends anyway, because they were bigger than me and they were in control.
You know, we got an email from Graham Storms, who is thanking us for all of our efforts, and he was recommending C.S. Lewis and his book, Mere Christianity. Are you familiar with that book, Carla?
I am. It is marvelous. If you would like to know from somebody who's become a Christian what he thinks Christianity is all about, read it. It just, he's so clear, and so, it's so simple to read, and just makes you cry. It's so beautiful. Oh, my goodness. His stories about his wife in there. He just lays it all out. So beautiful, that book. I can't recommend it highly enough. And if you want to know what he thinks somebody that would be against Christianity would think of it, you should read the book that's written about Christianity by a lesser devil named Screwtape, and it's called The Screwtape Letters, and he's writing to his teacher about the things that he's learning. And it's all the different ways that he can fool people and get their signature on the dotted line so that he's got them, and he can make them become evil souls and so forth and so on. I wish I could remember some quick quotes to give you from it. It's been too long, but oh my goodness, it's clever.
I thought you would know about that book.
Yeah.
C.S. Lewis, what was his most famous book?
Oh, golly. Got me there.
Uh-oh. Forget it. Okay. I thought you would know.
I'm looking real quick to see what Google thinks.
I know I read something by him when I was younger, but I can't remember what. But in any case, we had...
Yeah, the Narnia Chronicles are probably the most famous thing that he wrote.
Mm-hmm.
They're the Chronicles of Narnia that, was it Disney or who was it that made them into the most wonderful creative... what do you call a when you draw everything? But
cartoon.
Yeah, like a cartoon, but it's the lion, wonderful lion, and
mm-hmm.
all the different parts. And you open up a place in the back of the wardrobe, and you're going into this other world when you go through this place and the other wardrobe. It's just wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Great. Seja Hill in England said hello to all of us. I'm reading my emails. I'm trying to remember to do this on the calls so that those of you who are listening on the internet or even on the live call, which our lines are not open, we are paying attention to you. We can feel you. We can feel something, and I think it's you. I don't know that it's you, but I'm pretty sure it is, that when we do these calls, Let's just go move now into our group visualization. You know, the extraordinary thing about our calls is that while we do this and while we're talking, we have the idea that there are these intelligences in other realms that are here and they're paying attention to us. And that, of course, Terry is a voice for these intelligences, and so is Carla. But on this call, Terry will always bring in a little message. And if we get the idea that there is this timeline that we are all somewhere stuck on, where it's like the Joni Mitchell song. Remember the Joni Mitchell song? We're captured in the carousel of time.
Oh, wonderful song.
We can't return. We can only look behind from where we came and go round and round and round in the circle game. Right. So the interesting thing is that on all these timelines, there's a spiritual theory principle. I don't think it's a theory, but it's something you have to get and grasp for yourself to make it real, because you can't prove it scientifically. But there's an idea that all time exists simultaneously. Right now, the whole of history for trillions of years exists, and it exists as a track. It exists as if the universe was a computer and everything that happened got registered. And we are all somewhere stuck in that computer of the universe. And we have a little small hard drive that is our own unique piece of the timeline. And one of the goals of spiritual evolution, advancing yourself spiritually, is to expand your own hard drive and get networked with the timelines that are outside of your own contracted space. And, it's interesting because this all sounds like the internet, and the internet is a microcosm of the greater universe, because, of course, the internet allows each of us to expand infinitely into all the knowledge of our realm. It's on the internet. All you need to do is think of the right word to search for, and you have it. Never has anything like that existed. And I don't believe I could be doing what I'm doing. I couldn't have figured all this out without having a tool like the internet to explore things. And to just whatever I think of, I can find information about it. So the goal is, well, it's not necessarily your goal, but it's, if you're on a spiritual path, one way of looking at spiritual evolution is to find a place in your consciousness of a higher time track than you're on. And of course, these two group souls are at very high places in the time track, probably the Elohim higher than the rock group. But nonetheless, compared to us who are contracted into the Earth timeline, it is humongous. And as we learn to access those energies, we start to have the potential to reposition ourselves in the track. And so that's what this visualization seems to help. And we're working on the principle of the law of one. And the law of one is the foundational principle of the Ra group, where they have said through Carla's material that the entire universe is one energy. Everything is the same energy, just as in your body, all your cells are part of you, all of us are part of God. We're small parts. And the idea is, can we expand our own space to touch into a higher aspect of ourself? And can we learn to reposition our own reality so that we can recreate ourselves into a higher aspect of ourself and create with, you know, connect with the highest aspect of our potential. And so let's put our feet flat on the ground. And we're going to make connections right now with the oneness of the universe. We see ourselves standing on Earth, and the Earth is part of us. We're part of the Earth. And the Earth, according to what I've learned, is alive. It pays attention. It has feelings. It hurts. Humans have created. What's all that noise here? Let's see here. I don't see where it's coming from. Let me see here. Okay. So let's imagine the Earth coming up through our floor. And into our feet. And imagine that the Earth is so delighted that there's a group of humans that are actually noticing that she is aware of us and that are reaching to make connections. And that we can feel her in our feet. If you feel a sensation, imagine it might be the Earth. And we can tell the Earth right now. We can imagine that she's listening to us and we can tell her that we love her. And we can feel the Earth's energy move through our feet, through our legs, through our calves, through our thighs, right on up through our body, and to the top of our head. It's like a finger of energy running through us and surrounding us from Mother Earth. So take that in. Feel the friendship of the Earth. At some point, some energy in the universe separated itself and decided to be the Earth because it wanted to nurture a group of evolving beings, and we're those beings. We can have gratitude for all the lifetimes we've spent here on Earth. And we can even apologize on behalf of humanity for the ways that humans have disregarded the Earth and taken her for granted, not even considering that the Earth was alive and could hurt. And we move the energy above our head. We can go 1 foot above our head. We've gone through the top of our head. You know, the top of your head is called your crown chakra. And there's 7 chakras in your body, which we're going to be moving down through. And the crown chakra, metaphysically, is known as the gateway to intelligent infinity. And we're moving through the crown chakra, and we're above our head. And some of you can feel that. And we can keep moving. We can move up to the ceiling. We can move through the ceiling and move through. If there's any rooms above you, just keep moving through them to the roof. And now through the roof into the sky above your house. We keep moving through the sky, through the clouds, through the ionosphere, and we're moving through this shield that's around the Earth. There's a shield around the Earth that's designed to keep us contained within a certain limitation. And we're going to move through that. We're going to move above it. And we're moving through space. And we can also move through time. We can move through all of our past lifetimes. We can move to the place where we individuated ourselves. One time, there was just a mass of light energy, and each of us had to separate from that light energy to be individual, to have our own individual awareness. You know, there was a question I asked in the Elohim channelings. I said, how did a soul get started? Was the Elohim sitting there manufacturing souls? How did this occur? And the answer was very interesting. They said that the DNA in the earth realm of a new being would attract the energy. This is like for the first lifetime, would attract the energy from the field, and that energy would form around that DNA, and that would become the individuated soul. And then when that physical body died, the individuation stayed, and it would look for another body to continue its learning in this realm. And I would imagine each of us started way back in that process. And here we are, still continuing our learning process. Now we're going to that place, since all time exists simultaneously, we're going to that moment of individuation. And we all had a moment of individuation. And it was prior to all the things we experienced on the timeline of our track, the ways that we've been abused, the ways that we've been hurt, the ways that we've hurt other people, the ways that we've had untimely and painful deaths. It's all been stuck in our computer for eons, and right now we're going above it all. And as we do that, we all get very close to our original first cause. And as we are there, we can experience ourselves as pure energy. And that energy is following our requests. So I'm making requests, and you can go along with it if it feels comfortable, that we can all touch each other. We can create a combination of energy of all of us on this line. And when we do that, we can feel a sense of connection, of empowerment. And just as we told the earth that we loved her, we can tell each other we love each other. And you know, we have to be grateful, because if we were not on this line as a group, we couldn't do this. And so we thank each other for showing up so that we could have this experience. Now, from this place, this is a place prior to our physical creation of ourselves. And of course, it doesn't disregard the fact that we're in a body. We are in a body. We have to pay rent. We have to take care of our bodies. We have to take care of each other and the physical. But we can share this moment that's prior to all of that. At the same time, we do all the other stuff. And our reality in this realm precipitates from these higher places, which means if we're in the place above it all, we're in the place of creating precipitation that can download into the physical. And we're going to invite our group soul friends to join our energy, to join this group configuration. take a moment of silence and just feel the space. And this space is the space prior to manifestation in the physical realm. It's the space that's prior to your diseases, your dysfunctions, your hang-ups, your traumas. And we are now operating at a place where there is the potential to reconfigure things in your life, the people you care about, and the planet. Because we're operating in a timeline that's prior to all those negative things that have impacted us. Now, when we do this, we have two very important principles for the highest good of all concerned and honoring free will. And so we have a list that people put out every week that we people send in requests of things they'd like to configure. And to start off with, we'll do this a couple of times. Right now, just hold the thought, the space of things that you would like shifted in your life. Remembering for the highest good of all concerned and honoring free will. And I'm going to go through reading some of the requests for today. You don't have to make the request to make it work. You just have to hold it in your consciousness. But writing it down might help anchoring it and grounding it. So Marcia asks for healing for Jim Cole's daughter, Christy, who broke her ankle, and protection and healing for Jim Cole and his partner, Dan, in regards to his court trial. And Belinda in New Mexico, trying to rent her parents' house. Please send someone who will love and take care of it. Marcia, again in Panorama City, healing on all levels. And I think she's asking for financial abundance. Belinda says love and healing to the oceans around the world. We might add to the dolphins and whales in particular. Margaret Ortiz, who has pneumonia. Jennifer in Florida. Very ill with fibromyalgia. Please pray for my healing. Jennifer, I ran into a guy who wrote a book on healing fibromyalgia, emailed me, and he's a chiropractor in Phoenix. Email me, and I will send you the information. Zoe in Sacramento sends love light to her friend Jean, who for her surgery tomorrow. Perfect outcome of surgery. Healing for my cousin Jack in Florida of cancer. And the publication of her writings. And Ken in the USA. Guidance to be of service to others and receive abundant compensation and money for all I do. Guidance to be at the right place and the right time and making the right decisions in all of my life. You know, something I do is when I'm looking for something in the world, I make 100 phone calls and I feel the energy of whoever I'm talking to. And then I go back and I say, who is it that I really want to work with? Who did I feel connected with? It's like if you're looking for a job or looking for a mechanic or looking for a chiropractor. I have found that even the person that answers the phone reflects the energy of the office. And if you're sensitive, you'll pick it up and you'll make better decisions. And we have here Kathleen in the USA. I wonder if Kathleen and... Well, you know what? Geez, I'm mixing up. That guidance to be of service and receive abundant compensation was Kathleen. And Ken was sending a prayer for Miriam. Her brother Eddie just died, excuse me. And then we have Lori in Arizona. I'd like to put our Constitution, Bill of Rights, and the protection of the light, ask for chemtrails to be transmuted for the highest power of good. GMOs be removed from our food supply, that our movie be picked up at the Film Awards, the Real Cowboys and Aliens Film Awards. And she's in post-editing now. And so we send success to her movie project. And we have Lise in Rimrock, Arizona, complete healing, cure of all infections for myself and my daughter to be comfortable in our skins. And let me get... I just muted that. Okay, and remember, we were up there with a group energy that we created. We're holding that space. We're holding that point in the timeline above this timeline. You know, what we're doing is just what religion might call prayer, but we're doing it with different words, but the same idea. We're accessing the power and the strength of these group soul intelligences, which really are all part of oneness. You see, it's a paradox because there is one God, but it splits up like a prism and it becomes looking like many. And we're just going higher up in the prism. And now we're going to move that energy back from the top through the clouds, through the planets, through the outer energy field of the Earth, through our roof, through our ceiling, and into the top of our heads. And just imagine that you are connected. That feeling that some of you feel is actually your connection to Source, your experience of being part of all that is, and not separated, and not alienated, and not alone on this planet. And we move it through the top of our head, and let this energy move down through our body. Feel it as it goes through your third eye, through your eyes, through your nose, your mouth, your neck, your shoulders. And moving through all those places where the energy is blocked and stuck, and moving down into your chest and into your heart, and releasing all those things in your heart right now. You can do it. You can let it go. Let go the hurt, the betrayal, the fear. Forgive yourself and forgive others for everything you've done, they've done, that created hurt. Remember, according to our information, to graduate this realm, your heart has to be 51% open. And so don't hold those resentments in your heart, because you're losing percentage points. Let them go. Let them get swept up into this light energy and release. Just if you're in a state of suffering, if your body's uncomfortable, move above the suffering. Move above the pain. Let it go. Move from your heart to your solar plexus, your stomach. Feel the energy in your solar plexus expanding like a radiation. Not radiation like radioactivity, radiation like the sun, like love. Your solar plexus is the area of your third chakra. It's the area of your individuality. It's the area of your personal power. It's the area that creates boundaries. It creates an expression around you that allows people not to psychically influence you. Hold that energy strong so that you can stay centered no matter where you are. We go down to our second chakra, our procreative instruments. Also an area of great pleasure. Also an area of great hurt. Let's fill that area with energy. Let's learn to understand our own sexuality and learn to have joyous expressions that never create hurt. if you're not in a committed type relationship and someone once said that if you're not going to have a committed relationship, which is probably the best of all worlds, if you're not, then if you're going to have expression sexually, make sure you leave the person better than you found them. Because if you create hurt, you're creating karma. And move down through your legs, through your root chakra, through your calves, through your feet, into the earth again. And take a moment and feel that energy moving through you, that you are in the center of your universe, and you have expanded from the earth into the celestial realms. And that part of you that is outside of your body is going to continue after your body dies. You are an eternal being that has come in and occupied this body to have certain experiences. And right now, you are in the middle of your experience as an energy that's in a body and not just a body. We're going to do our little invocation to the light. Now, we don't really need to do it because we've actually just did it in that long visualization, but we're going to do it just to keep in practice. Father, Mother, God, we ask for the presence of the light to surround and protect each person on this line. Any negativity be taken to the higher realms of light and transmuted for the highest good of all concerned. We see ourselves in the flow of energy radiating from the center of the universe through the galaxies, through the Milky Way, through the solar system, through the outer energy fields of planet Earth, through our bodies and grounded into the center of the earth. And right now, we invoke a group energy connection while maintaining the sovereign integrity of our souls. And we invite those sources that are positive, service to others, honoring the Christ of light, to join with us, and we create a protected space that only the positive has access to. And anything not of that nature must leave now. And what, Terry is standing here. What's the matter?
My line keeps being muted, and then it's on hold.
All right. Okay. Terry's line got muted, so I'm going to hand her my...
It should be resolved right now, so you can go back to her phone.
Resolved it. Okay. You want to do it here? Terry? Here. We'll just do it right here. Here we go.
We greet you in the love light of the one infinite creator. It is our joy to make connection with each and every person who wishes connection made. And we take a moment and we are there for you and we recognize the things that you are putting in the light, whether you have emailed them or not, or put them on the list or not. And we also send the healing energy to other people who are praying within the earth realm. We remind you that you are greater than your bodies. You are greater than the situations you have run into in the earth plane. These are catalysts, can be catalysts for growth, for learning, for greater expression, abilities to bypass the things that are stuck within your life, the way around stuck situations, and know that you are bigger than those situations. You are more than those situations. You are. And you are one that has taken on a boundary to all others, to your connection with all. And you have had a boundary placed there, or you have placed a boundary there that individuates you. And even individuated, you are a part of all. And all is a part of you. And therefore, you are not alone. You are never alone. And you are love. We take a moment to resonate that you are loved. You are love. And you can receive. You have the ability to receive love. And there are stucknesses which can prevent the bringing through of love or the receipt of love. But these can be dissolved and you can feel the love. You can know that you are loved and you are part of all. And you are never lesser than. We love each and every one of you. We appreciate this opportunity to connect. And those things that you have put in the light, we also put in the light. And we take a moment for the light to be absorbed. For movement begins, for change, for shift to the better. We love you. We leave, but we do not leave.
Thank you. Your phone should be working now. We're going to move right into a planetary healing. Our planet is in the midst, planet Earth, Mother Earth, is in the midst of a shift. And just like our bodies have configurations in them of trauma, of pain, that's Terry picking up her phone.
Yes.
Okay. You know, the problem was my fault because I was muting you, and I didn't recognize your phone number, okay?
There's somebody... buzz on my phone, and I thought it might be interfering.
Then you keep unmuting, and I keep muting, and I think somebody out there is going to try to configure, you know, do something. And I don't, it looks like, well, I don't want to explain this all out. I don't want to change the space, but you're muted again.
You put it on hold instead of mute.
So, okay, we're moving into that place where we are above the timelines of everything that ever happened on this planet, everything that's negative, every point of trauma. And we are radiating from that timeline into this timeline. And we can see our planet surrounded with this pure energy, just as we surrounded ourselves with that pure energy. Remember, we can't violate free will. We can't take away what we call the negatives' right to do their thing. But we can surround and reinforce the positive. As we come down on our planet, we see all these pinpricks of light, all those people around our planet who are praying, who are reaching, who are holding an intention for transformation, who are positive and loving. And many of them feel disconnected, and they feel in their own isolation. Let us bring our energy down and surround them. And on their free will choice, they can receive this energy. And we bring this energy to the oceans. We see it setting on the ocean and moving through the water, transmuting toxins, touching the dolphins and whales, connecting with them. We see this energy surrounding all those capitals of the world where people are making decisions for their countries, that many of them connecting with the elite, the negative. We see it surrounding and finding compassion in people, reinforcing it. Asking for people to touch into their compassion so they can make decisions that are compassionate. That those people in those positions of power, some of them will never do this, but there are those that will, and we reach for those people to make those decisions. We can visualize the mass of humanity, many people touching and experiencing this energy. In particular, all the wanderers in this realm, all those beings which many of you would fit into that category, who have come from higher dimensions to take bodies here to be of service and have forgotten that that's why you came. That's what happens. And you are the seeds. You are the seeds and the hope for the transformation of this planet. We surround our planet and we nurture the earth. Just see the earth surrounded in this huge loving energy. And we move through the earth's surface to those places where there's earthquake potentials. And we surround all the fault lines on our planet with love light. And as we usually do, we do the ring of fire. All of the fault lines and the land masses surrounding the Pacific Ocean, which is the most volatile earthquake zone. And as we visualize this, we quickly look at a map and see the southern tip of South America. And we imagine our energies, our group energies, the huge, powerful group energy of all of us and all of the positive sources and other dimensions that want to work with us, coming down like laser beams and striking through the earth, going through the earth, and surrounding those fault lines. And we move up through the southern tip of South America, up the west coast of South America, up to Central America, up the west coast of Central America, up through Mexico, up through Southern California, San Diego, all the beaches, up to Los Angeles and all the environs of Los Angeles. If you're in one of these cities and I mention your area, shut your eyes and send your energy through to the earth. Think of yourself like a cosmic antenna, picking up the energy of the universe and focusing it into the earth. Up through Ventura, Santa Barbara, the coastline to San Francisco, to the East Bay, Oakland, Berkeley, Marin County, Concord, up the coast, Mendocino. We go through to Portland, Oregon, and the coastline of Portland. And see our energy just penetrating through the earth, the ground, underneath, finding fault lines. Washington, Seattle, Vancouver, up the coast of Canada, across to Alaska, down the eastern coast of Russia, China, Singapore, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Philippines, and Japan. And let us see our energy surrounding Fukushima in Japan, which is still radioactive. We ask our sources to help cap any of the radioactivity, help shift it, make it inert. We move down through Australia and New Zealand. We are lovingly guiding the energies of the universe for the highest good. Let's go into the areas of interventions, chemtrails, the molecular reconfiguration of chemtrails so they're harmless. We ask that nuclear weapons, any nuclear weapons in this realm, be disabled, not allowed to go off. We ask for compassionate flow of economic changes that take into consideration those people at the lower end of the income scale that could be hurt by the wrong flow and the wrong intent. You know, when I was doing earthquakes, I neglected to go through St. Louis, the New Madrid Fault, the Mid-Atlantic Fault, and anywhere on our planet that there's a potential fault. We send our energy through the earth. We ask our sources to help find those areas and make any seismic activity small and away from population centers for the highest good. We should send our light to the Middle East, which has a huge amount of historical potential for negative things to happen. We send love, compassion, people getting along with each other. We send the light to all those souls that were hurt or killed in various U.S. activities there, to all those souls in, I believe it's Iraq, where depleted uranium was used, and there's a lot of hurt children, incidents of cancer, mutated children. It's very sad. Send the light to that area. We just ask our sources to find anything that we haven't asked for, to work with that on our planet for the highest good. Points of hurt, trauma, inequity, and as we were talking about Los Angeles, and we went through Los Angeles, I didn't make a mention of this, but Vaughn in North Hollywood is having a live event there. And we just send everybody our love who is participating in that. And I'll tell you, they have told us that it's really important to hold space in Los Angeles because it's one of those cities that has a very high potential for either positive or negative, and it's dependent on how many people are holding positive space there. And on that note, it's 11:55, and we can close this session.